When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Warning, this podcast contains explicit language and details acts of violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Over the past few months, we've learned about the origins of deputy gangs, how they operate, why they target people they are sworn to protect, and how they are protected from consequences. But deputy gangs are just a piece of the problem. The psychological abuse, physical assaults, and killings of LA County residents are not limited to deputy gang members. The department and the criminal justice system are set up in a way that facilitates this behavior and allows it to go unpunished.
LA is not safe!
This is A Tradition of Violence, a history of deputy gangs inside of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. In Los Angeles County, thousands of people make their way through the county jail system each year. Like other jurisdictions, most of the people in custody have not been convicted of a crime. They are there because they cannot afford to bail out. The LA County jails are staffed by sheriff's deputies, many of whom are fresh from the academy. Typically, the jails are their first assignment after they graduate. For years, the jails have had reputations of being hotbeds of abuse that persists today.
I think there's this general sense in the larger community that jails make us safe, and that if somebody cannot post bail, then we need to make sure they're kept in jail until they're convicted. And there are no studies that bear that out. In fact, as you can imagine, it's largely the opposite. When somebody's put in jail, it's an incredible disruption. Even if you're able to post bail, say, a couple weeks later, you've missed work for 2 weeks, so who knows if you have a job. You've been away from your family for 2 weeks, who knows what's happened to them in that time. And you've been exposed to COVID in this setting for 2 weeks, and you're bringing it back to the community. I'm sure the LA County's COVID rate is in part due to the fact that we've been churning people in and out of the jails constantly. So this idea that incarcerating people pretrial keeps us safe just really doesn't hold water. It damages our communities to rip people out of their lives for even misdemeanors and before they've been proven guilty. And there's just no reason that there needs to be, I think today, over 13,000 people in jail, upwards of 60% of whom have not been convicted of a crime.
This is Melissa Camacho, a senior staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California. A large part of her job is keeping an eye on the LA County jail system as part of the organization's 40-year-old monitoring settlement with the county.
People generally know they can get away with whatever they want to do in the jails, and they're not going to receive any repercussions. The jails are a black hole. the public just does not have adequate access to what happens there. The sheriff's department blocks media access, blocks media requests. There's very little public information available about jail conditions, period, and much more. So if you want to hide a problematic deputy, sergeant, I can imagine the jails being a very good place to do that.
Most of Melissa's time is spent responding to complaints from incarcerated people.
We get consistent complaints of broken toilets and people in crises leaving feces on walls or on the floor. We've received complaints regarding conditions and not getting showers and not getting access to law library as forms of harassment from nearly every section of MCJ. In the year that I've been there, the investigations into those grievances are slow and generally conclude that they can't be founded. It's really the word of the person who's incarcerated against the entire custody department, and the sheriff's department will generally back its own.
One incident Melissa reviewed that occurred in September 2021 was particularly disturbing.
There was a lockdown within Men's Central Jail. The reason for the lockdown given by the sheriff's department was that there was fear that there was a gun in the jail. And at least two tiers were then subject to a strip and visual body cavity search and walked down flights of stairs completely naked. The reports were also that people were walked in front of male and female officers, and people subject to this incident told the jail monitors that they were mocked and that other humiliating comments were made as they were walking down in this naked parade down the flights of stairs, and were kept for hours in a yard, still, again, with boxers and no shoes. And this is 2021, so we're also talking COVID. People taken en masse with no COVID precautions, no masks, no way of protecting themselves. And as far as the Rosas monitors know, and as far as the public knows, there's been no accountability.
Besides all of this, Melissa says that she and others at the ACLU are concerned that deputy gangs inside of the jail may be making a comeback, specifically in Men's Central Jail, home of the 3,000 boys.
Our concern is that deputy gangs within the jails are alive and well. We receive a lot of reports of violence from the jails, but even more so from Men's Central Jail. So since November 2018, we've received 624 reported incidents of violence in Men's Central Jail, and that's more than we've received from all of the other LA County jails combined.
What is there to do when the powers that be are not acting as they should and providing an accountability process?
One thing to do is to vote for people on the County Board of Supervisors who are committed to closing Men's Central Jail and to pressure those who are currently on it to set a timeline for that closure. I believe that the movement has a great ally in Supervisor Holly Mitchell. She pushed powerfully for more money and resources for the Office of Diversion and Reentry and was shot down by the rest of the supervisors. There are also some legislative efforts to shine more light into jail systems. One law that's being proposed and will hopefully pass will require sheriff's departments to report on in-custody deaths. So right now, the sheriff's departments do have to report to the state of California when somebody dies in custody and provide basic information. But that information lags. In LA County, that is such a huge issue because there are a record number of people dying in LA County. People are dying in the jails at the rate of about one person per week. It's a higher number than has ever been recorded by the county or the state.
Dignity and Power Now, a nonprofit organization dedicated to abolition and restorative justice, has studied in-custody deaths with the help of the University of California, Los Angeles's Carceral Ecologies Lab. Dr. Terrence Keel reviewed their findings at a press conference outside of LASD headquarters this past summer.
We, over the last 2 years, have been working to study and analyze autopsies from individuals who lost their lives unlawfully inside of Los Angeles County Jail. And what we know is that our community partners in 2019 requested from the county coroner the deaths of every individual who died inside of jail from 2009 and 2019. And what they received were 59 autopsies. But in truth, there were 292 people who died during that period of time. There were 233 autopsies that our community partners did not get access to when they requested them. Now, why is that? Well, part of the reason is that in Los Angeles County, the Sheriff's Department is able to use what's called a security hold. This is the ability of the county sheriff to put any autopsy toxicology report about the death in jail or about a death in the county, making it inaccessible to anyone in the public. Autopsy records are protected under the California state law of open records. Any individual in the state of California has the right and the ability to get the autopsy of the loss of a loved one or a community member. And security holds undermine that vital democratic practice of transparency, of accountability.
Even with just 59 autopsies in hand, what the researchers were able to find was shocking.
One, what we learned is that Black men, the overwhelming majority of them, are dying in Los Angeles County Jail, and those deaths are being classified as natural deaths. These are deaths that are thought to be caused to illnesses like cardiovascular disease, pulmonary disease, diabetes, even influenza. But what's shocking about this is that when we look at these autopsies more carefully, what we realize is that the vast majority of these cases had evidence of violence on their body. We're talking about bone fractures, bone breaks, lacerations, hematomas, abrasions, things that were not accounted for in the death classification. How is it that someone died naturally with this amount of violence on their body? The county coroner needs to answer this question, because for us as researchers and as communities, we are confused about how this is just. How is this accountability?
Several families who have lost loved ones are working directly with researchers to figure out what exactly happened to them.
My name is Terry Lovett. I'm the mother of Jelani Lovett that was killed in the Van Central Jail. I received my son's autopsy report in January. I received photos from the coroner's office in November, and the coroner's photos and the autopsy report don't match each other. They talk about stuff that they've been, their narrative, from my understanding, their narrative is supposed to be how they walk into a room, they see a crime scene, they're supposed to write the story, what they see. That's not what they do. This happens on your watch. It's not acceptable. And I won't stop until I find out who did what they did to my son.
The mysterious deaths aren't limited to Men's Central Jail. Here's Lasita Hamilton speaking about the death of her brother, Tamiko Tyler, at the Pitches Detention Center.
My brother, Tamiko Tyler, was killed in the Pitches Detention Center March 3rd, 2017. The whole process that I've been dealing with them with from the beginning to the end, I asked for my autopsy report in the beginning. They said they were processing it. For about 2 years, I sat and fought with them trying to get my autopsy report as I paid for it to be expedited. I went down there numerous times throughout my case just to make sure. I just need to know some type of verification about my brother. So they bring out a picture of him and it shows facial beating. Throughout then here comes 2019. I finally get the autopsy report. It has bits and pieces. It's chopped up into just different time stamps of who signed off on it. And also it in details lacerations. If originally you guys said he had a seizure, there should not be any type of marks or lacerations, none of the above on his body. So today I still stand here and hold them accountable for trying to hide what happened in Pitches Detention Center.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
Deputy gang members are assisted by many arms of Los Angeles County government while carrying out their agendas, like the LA County District Attorney. When deputy gang members arrest people on bogus charges, it's up to the DA to decide whether or not to prosecute that case.
So whenever I see a case and the only charge is resisting arrest, it always raises a red flag.
This is Jovan Blacknell. He's a criminal defense and civil rights attorney. He was retained by the family of Barry Montgomery. I spoke to him at his office a few months ago.
Barry is a special needs. He's a very small person. He's about 5'2", maybe 120 pounds, maybe. He very rarely speaks. At the time, Barry is probably around 30 years old.
On July 14th, 2014, just before 9:30 p.m., Barry was walking through Enterprise Park in the Willowbrook neighborhood near his home.
Some officers saw him in the park. So the officers see Barry, they approach him. Well, you can have a conversation with Barry, and Barry might turn and walk away from you during the conversation. You might talk to him, and he won't look at you. Or you talk to him, and he won't respond back. Or if he does respond back, it's a grunt yes and no, you know. And so I believe the officers took his behavior as like a challenge to their authority. So like some insubordination. The officers wind up tackling Barry to the ground and pretty severely beating him up to the point, I think Barry had 11 broken bones or fractured bones. Both eye sockets were fractured. One was sunken in, so he has permanent double vision. He had a fracture to his skull. We found out later that it ended up in a traumatic brain injury.
And Barry was charged with a crime as a result of this beating.
He was charged with 3 felony counts of resisting arrest by force. They claimed that Barry was overpowering them.
One of the deputies involved in the beating was an associate of a deputy gang. Jovan did not know that until I showed up at his office.
Did you know that one of the deputies who participated in this attack is a deputy gang associate?
I don't think we knew at the time. No, I don't think we knew at the time.
Armando Diaz, do you remember? He's allegedly associated with the 3,000 Boys. Are you familiar with that?
No.
The 3,000 Boys is a deputy gang based on the 3,000 floor of Men's Central Jail, and they are notorious for beating inmates, sometimes to death. In April of 2008, Diaz was part of a group of officers that beat a man named Velton Boone.
Wow. Now I got to go back and look at it. There's no coincidence that Diaz would be in these environments and continue to be in these situations where people are significantly hurt, their rights are significantly violated, and he's still on the force and still collecting his paychecks and still having all the, you know, all the authority that he always had.
That information is supposed to be handed over to criminal defense and civil attorneys. But the district attorney's office does not always follow the rules. The court was also skeptical that Barry was neurodivergent. Jovan had to prove that Barry could not comprehend what was going on. After he did, the case was eventually dismissed. A civil case was filed, which LA County eventually settled for over $2 million, paid for by taxpayers. Jovan says the verdict is still not enough to cover Barry's ongoing physical and mental health issues stemming from the attack. Unfortunately, deputies brutalizing people in the midst of mental health crises is a frequent occurrence. Marco Vasquez Jr. and his wife, Christina, knew to be wary of deputies. They grew up in East LA County and had seen deputy abuse firsthand. Christina had worked in the Twin Towers Correctional Facility, across the street from Men's Central Jail. She had seen suspicious deaths herself.
They needed to input stuff on a spreadsheet, but I'm reading too because now, like, what the heck? How are you claiming this inmate died of a diabetic coma when what they have reported, that's not even close to how they found the inmate? And I'm thinking, if I'm questioning it, how are the higher-ups not questioning it? I would go home and be like, oh my God, you know, talking to Marco about it. And he would say, yeah, you can't trust the officers.
Marco was the kind of person who would go to any length to protect his family. Here is his mom, Leticia.
He always wanted to be the protector and felt that it was his responsibility to care for mom and dad and his brother. He was also very mischievous and class clown. What can I say as a mom? That's my boy. I loved everything about him. I wouldn't want anyone else other than him. I was blessed to call my son.
Marco met Christina young, and they quickly built a life together.
We met when we were 13 in junior high, and we fell in love very quickly. By the time we were 14, we were pregnant with our first daughter. And in total, we have 5 children together. We didn't end up getting married until, fast forward to 2015, we got married. So we almost hit our 5-year mark. He loved being a father. He prided himself in that. Like, all my walls went down with him. He was my person. And I feel very fortunate that I found him as young as I did.
Marco was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and on October 6, 2019, he was in the midst of an episode. His family knew he needed help and requested assistance from 911 with getting him to a 5150 hold. Marco even called because he believed his family was in danger. Deputies and a social worker came to the house but told the family they would not be taking Marco to the hospital as he was not a threat and left. Marco's episode continued, and the family called for help again. Dispatch told Christina that deputies would arrive soon to assess the situation.
I remember them getting there because they announced on their speaker, but their lights were off, and they flashed the floodlights at us, and they say, did you guys call? Yes. Get out of the way. So I'm like, okay, well, they're asking us to get out of the way because they're going to put the patrol car right next to the driveway. So then I shout out, babe, they're here. He was standing on the steps of the house. Okay, good. And then once we move out of the way, When they start rolling up, it was like the scene of a movie because everything was so slow motion. But they are jumping out of the vehicle and they're already cocking their guns. Because you just heard, and we go running and we're screaming.
Marco's younger brother, who was standing behind him, was also grazed by a bullet. LASD says that Marco was holding a knife to the throat of a woman when he was shot. That never happened.
Sergeant Vincent Cisneros, Patricia Miramontes, deputy, and deputy Greg Nichols are the shooters. They didn't give him a chance. They didn't give him a command. They didn't even wait a second to shoot.
I couldn't move, and I remember screaming. Like, I almost fell to the ground, but, like, where I'm holding my stomach and I'm screaming because, and I've told people this, I physically felt him leave. Like, I knew he was gone. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. Like, they killed him. And I remember seeing my mother-in-law jump on top of him screaming no, and then an officer dragging her off, and then I saw my middle daughter, who was with me, run, and she threw herself to the ground, and she's holding Marco's head, and she's like, Dad, please wake up, please wake up, because she had his blood on her hands. And then another officer dragging her off, and we're all going crazy. And I remember he's screaming at me, and he's like, if you don't shut her the fuck up, I'm going to take her too. And I remember screaming at them, like at the top of my lungs, what am I supposed to tell my sons? Like, my baby will never know his father. What am I supposed to tell my son when he asks me where his daddy is?
The family was taken to the station and interrogated for hours. Meanwhile, deputies searched and trashed their home. A machete Marco had surveyed the property with earlier in the day was recovered from behind a couch. It was later used in evidence. The family has met with L.A. District Attorney George Gascon and told me that the office will not charge the deputies who killed Marco. Christina and Leticia believe that's because there was no video of the shooting. The deputies were not wearing body cameras.
One of the first things they asked, did anybody record it? One of the first questions. I was hoping Marco's story would be different and there'd be a different outcome. Now it's like, well, I'm going to do what I have to do to keep my kids safe because I can't count on law enforcement. I can't count on Gascon. I can't count on city officials and all these people that promised to make changes.
For those that have not gone through this, I pray that no other family ever does. But if you're ever in this situation, don't talk to the cops.
On March 14th, 2021, deputies killed another man in the midst of a mental health crisis. David Ordaz Jr. is remembered by his family as a charismatic person who loved to laugh.
My name's Jasmine, and David was my partner and the father of my three children. He just had a really big personality. David always found fun in everything.
My name is Hilda Pedrosa, and I am the oldest sister of David. David was also that kind of person that he wanted to get everybody involved. If he saw someone who was very quiet in the corner, that's the person that he was going to go after to try to befriend them, to try to get them out of their shell.
My name is Emily Alyssa Ordaz, and David Ordaz Jr. was my dad. He was a very encouraging dad. And, you know, when he wasn't struggling with his mental health, he was like the best dad any daughter could ask for.
David had been struggling that month. On March 14th, 2021, he experienced a mental health crisis and allegedly threatened to hurt himself, according to 911 calls. Body camera footage shows deputies showing up and asking him to drop a knife in his hands while pointing guns at him. His family pleads with him from behind their front gate. One deputy says,
"Hey, Sarge, you should hit him with one."
One deputy fires a less lethal round, then a wave of gunshots ring out, fired by deputies Edwin Navarrete, Jaime Romero, Nathaniel Trujillo, and Ramin Pineda. David collapses to the floor as his family screams. On November 10th, 2022, District Attorney George Gascon announced that Ramin Pineda would be charged with assault with a firearm and assault under color of authority. To be clear, Pineda is not being charged for David's killing. He's being charged with continuing to fire once he was already on the ground.
I feel like as a whole, every single deputy that was there was
responsible. I'm not happy. I feel like we still need to fight for some sort of charges against the other deputies.
I would expect that if you can admit that one of the officers was at fault for my dad's killing, then what stops you from admitting fault for the other three? They all played a part in it.
I think when people heard about it, they were happy because they thought that he was going to be accused for David's murder. But he's not. He's not being accused for his murder. He's only being accused for that last shot. That's not justice. But the system's not made to work for us.
Just a few weeks later, Isaias Cervantes, a young neurodivergent man, had a violent encounter with deputies while inside his Cudahy home.
He was a 25-year-old at the time who was diagnosed with autism. He was deaf from birth, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and frankly, through the diagnosis of medical doctors, had the intellectual capacity of a six-year-old. You know, he lives with his mom. And by the way, he has a twin brother, Isaac Cervantes, who suffers from cerebral palsy and is confined to a wheelchair.
Attorney Christian Contreras, who represents several families who have lost loved ones to the actions of deputy gang members, represents Isaias and his family.
So Isaias, you know, was having a mental health episode that day, like many people do, you know, and especially people with his type of conditions. So the family called the police, and there's tapes out there, 911 tapes, of course, from the sister, Yadira, who called 911, and she says several things. One of them is, of course, that he is intellectually disabled. He suffers from several conditions, but one of the main points that she broached was that, can you take him to the hospital?
The deputies began the interaction by speaking to the Cervantes family, similarly to how they had spoken to the family of Marco Vasquez Jr.
When deputies arrived, they spoke with the family, and to their credit, they didn't go in their guns blazing at first. They did speak to the family, which is puzzling because when they spoke to the family, they confirmed that, yes, he has several conditions and that, yes, you know, he's having a mental health episode. But if you watch the video, which is public, there's a point in time where the mom says, he's scared of you guys. That is the triggering point where the deputies go into the home and then have guns blazing. I mean, they don't have their guns out, but they go in there aggressively. They get to the front of the sidewalk, to the front of the door of the home, and they tell Isaias, Isaias, you're not under arrest, but we're going to put handcuffs on you. Imagine how that sounds to a person in his shoes. As they approach him, Isaias, while he's calmly sitting on the couch, the deputies ask him to stand up. And as soon as they touch him, he kind of squirms. He has OCD, so someone with OCD doesn't like being touched. And as soon as Isaias does that, Deputy Miramontes grabs him, puts him in a chokehold, and throws him down, and Isaias is face down in his living room. You have Miramontes, who is approximately 200 pounds, in comparison to 130-pound 5'9 Isaias, choking him with his full body weight, full pressure, and a rear naked chokehold, which is a very serious situation. At the same time, you have David Vega, Deputy Vega, who is much heavier than Miramontes, maybe 220, 250, who has his knee on the back of Isaias' back, pinning him down. So you have Isaias, who is pinned from the back, pinned from the front, one through a chokehold, another through a knee to the back.
Isaias was completely immobile. The deputies claim their body-worn cameras were knocked off as they wrestled Isaias to the floor.
And then you have the cover-up. This is the point in the situation where there's an allegation that Isaias is going for a gun. So you tell me how someone who is face down, laying down on the floor, face down, who is being choked and is being pinned with a knee on his back by two full-grown men over 200 pounds, how it's even physically able or capable or possible for him to reach back and even get that gun. Physically impossible, because when you're laying down on the floor, you can't extend your arms all the way to be able to really do anything. You could just move it, and that's about it. But that's the allegation that came from Deputy Miramontes. He said, he's going for my gun. And David Vega, the deputy with the knee on the back, responds and gets his firearm out and points it point blank in the back of Isaias and shoots him. And the bullet enters the back of Isaias, and there's shrapnel everywhere, and there's blood everywhere. And Isaias is taken to a hospital where he undergoes surgery, and he survives, fortunately, but they shatter his vertebrae, and he is now permanently paralyzed from the chest down. So he's confined to a wheelchair now, at least.
After being shot in the back, Isaias was criminally charged.
Subsequently, they charged Isaias with three felonies. I believe it was two PC-69s, resisting arrest with force. Yes, when you're pinned down to the floor, resisting arrest with force. And I think assault with a deadly weapon. I don't even know how they could charge that one. He never had the weapon. We knew it was ridiculous from the outset.
With the help of several advocacy groups, Christian was able to get the criminal case dropped.
We're talking about ACLU. We're talking about all the major disability organizations and civil rights organizations. And they sent a letter to Gascon, and the case ended up being dropped.
Is there a deputy gang element in this case?
Potentially. Of course, I would want to explore deputy gang aspect. But right now, I think what's most imperative is to get this family justice, some sort of compensation, because, you know, he needs round-the-clock care. This has really affected him psychologically, truly, 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 truly.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
LA County Sheriff's deputies stop Black people twice as often as they do white people, according to a report from the ACLU SoCal. Far too often, those stops have deadly consequences. And that is an accepted fact for thousands of people of color living in Los Angeles County. People changed their schedules to avoid any contact with deputies. Jamal Simpson learned how dangerous the police were growing up in South Los Angeles. One of his close friends shared with me that the two of them were frequently harassed by cops, starting from when they were kids. I'm going to keep that friend anonymous for their safety. Jamal's sisters shared that despite the many challenges he faced, Jamal was the anchor of their family. Their mother died when Jamal was a young child, on the day of his graduation from elementary school. His father says the death deeply affected Jamal. Jamal loved children and family. He was a dedicated uncle to his nephews and took it upon himself to check up on his sisters and father on a daily basis. In the early morning hours of August 1st, 2019, Jamal was riding with his friend to cash a check in Inglewood, outside of LASD's jurisdiction. But a deputy maneuvered behind them and began to pursue the car without its siren lights on. The friend says that Jamal began to panic. He was out on bail for a pending robbery charge and implied that he had a gun. He asked his friend to keep driving. One of the deputies pursuing them had a history. Gregory Van Housen shot and killed 16-year-old Anthony A.J. Weber just over a year earlier. Van Housen shot the teenager at least 13 times. He claimed that A.J. had a gun, but no weapon was ever recovered. LASD insisted on pushing the unfounded notion that the gun was removed from AJ's body by a bystander while deputies stood by. A civil case was filed, which cost taxpayers just under $4 million. Van Housen was never criminally charged for that shooting, and it doesn't appear he was disciplined either. Instead, he was back out on patrol, chasing Jamal's friend as he drove down a street outside of LASD's jurisdiction. Jamal attempted to exit the vehicle. His attorney, Jaye Person Lin, says that was Jamal's right as the passenger of the car. But the patrol car was so close behind them, he could not open the door. Eventually, Jamal's friend was able to maneuver to a roadblock and let Jamal out. Van Housen chased Jamal and shot him multiple times in the back. Jamal was hit 18 times. He died at the scene. Jamal's family filed a civil lawsuit against the county for his death, which is ongoing. Van Housen was not charged in this shooting either. Why he was in Inglewood was never explained. He's still working for the department and was last seen at Men's Central Jail. It's unclear if Van Housen was disciplined for this shooting. It's unclear if LASD makes a point to discipline deputies who violate departmental policy during fatal shootings. On June 23, 2021, 28-year-old Frederick Holder, who was unarmed, was shot and killed by deputies Christopher Conger, Javier Fierros, and Jackie Rojas while he stopped at a red light on a freeway on-ramp. Fred was deeply loved by his family. I spoke to them last summer during a protest in Fred's memory. They describe him as an upbeat health food nut. His goal was to pursue singing. He even auditioned for The Voice. Here is his mom, April.
He was a good guy. He took care of his sisters. He was that perfect little gentleman, man. He opened the door for them, closed the door. He was just a good kid, I know. He was a goofy kid, he was a fun person. I'm still like kind of in shock. No.
The day of the shooting, a Los Angeles Police Department helicopter operator requested an LASD unit to attempt to stop a white Ford utility box truck Fred was driving. The car wasn't wanted for anything. The LAPD operator said over a radio communication the vehicle was being pursued because the tailgate was open. Christopher Conger said in a statement that his partner, Deputy Stephen Doma, radioed to Conger that he was going to initiate a felony traffic stop. It is against LASD's policy to pursue vehicles for reckless driving. According to the department, four LASD vehicles surrounded the truck on a residential street and used a public announcement system to instruct Fred to get out. Fred drove away slowly onto a nearby freeway on-ramp with deputies following. They parked behind Fred and exited carrying firearms. None of them were wearing body cameras, despite the department requiring the activation of body-worn cameras during vehicle stops and pursuits. Within seconds of approaching, the deputies opened fire on the truck, which was surrounded by other people in their cars. Fred was hit 11 times and died at the scene. His family was not notified for about a week. Conger, Fierros, and Rojas are still on duty and do not appear to have been disciplined for violating multiple policies in this shooting. District Attorney George Gascon recently found that they acted in lawful self-defense and were not criminally charged. A civil claim Fred's family filed against the county is ongoing. We've covered multiple shootings in this podcast, but that's just a fraction of the lives taken by deputies. In 2022, deputies with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department shot 19 people. 14 of them died. And shootings are just one part of the violence that deputies inflict regularly on residents. It's common for deputies to violently arrest people and leave them with devastating injuries. On October 16th, 2022, at 1:13 a.m., two deputies pulled up to the Good Batch Hookah Lounge in Inglewood, again outside of their jurisdiction. Blake Anderson, the lounge's security guard, was standing outside talking to a childhood friend. Just a few seconds after pulling into the lot, the deputies launched out of the car, pointed at Blake, and slammed him into the lounge's glass windows, shattering them. Immediately, the deputy and his partner began beating Blake relentlessly and banging his head into the concrete. Blake lost vision in his eye as a result of the attack. Blake told me that while he was being beaten, the deputy said to him, quote, "I'm going to blow your fucking brains out." Video shows the deputy putting his gun to the back of Blake's head multiple times. Another deputy pointed his gun at the crowd that formed around them and yelled, "Get back, or I'm going to shoot all of you." When I broke this story for Knock LA, then-Sheriff Alex Villanueva said on a Facebook Live that there is, quote, "false information being circulated by activists masquerading as journalists." Villanueva is no longer sheriff, but Blake is still being charged with assault on a police officer for this incident. Violent arrests haven't gone away under Sheriff Robert Luna. On December 9, 2022, just a few days after Sheriff Luna was sworn in, a transgender woman was violently arrested by deputies in West Hollywood. Annie Jump spotted deputies at her apartment building that evening. Another unit frequently had domestic violence incidents, which Annie Jump and other neighbors had begged deputies to investigate. Annie Jump had even spoken about the issue at a city council meeting. Deputies never did anything, and that night was no different. But the following morning, Annie Jump says she saw deputies sitting outside her home again.
I was like, "Why are you here?" And they said, "Domestic violence case. We're doing an investigation." And I'm at the front door, and I said, "Oh, see, sheriffs, I can't let you in. I don't see a warrant. It's not like you did anything the last time you were here anyway." So I told them, "If you want to get in the building, you can call the landlord. His number's right there on the box." I entered the number, got my feet in the door, turned around, tried to pull the door shut, because they are legally not allowed in, and the sheriff grabbed the door and pulled it open. The deputy decides to just grab my arm and throw it behind my back, attempt to. He's not stating anything, not that I'm being detained, not reading me Miranda rights, nothing. And then he calls his buddy over for help. They said, "She's resisting." So they bent my knees and threw my head into the wall. After they put the cuffs on my hands, they put their knees on my wrists. And I said, "Please, you're cutting off circulation to my hand." They, for some reason, hog-tied my legs, and they carried me out parallel to the ground. They placed me face down on the asphalt, opened the sheriff's door, fucking picked me up like a piece of furniture and slid me in.
The charges against Annie Jump were dropped by District Attorney George Gascon. But since the incident, on multiple occasions, Annie Jump has seen deputies sitting in parked cars or milling about just below her bedroom window.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
People often say that it's just a small number of cops who are responsible for bad behavior. Many people point to the proverbial good cops who work hard to keep their colleagues in check. But from what I've learned in my reporting, it doesn't happen like that. Good cops are targeted, pushed out, and punished. Last summer, I met with someone who experienced this firsthand.
My name is Lori Atwater. I'm a former law enforcement officer. I was sworn law enforcement between 1986 and 1994. I've been doing income taxes for primarily law enforcement and firefighters in Southern California for 26 years.
I remember one time you told me, like, oh, it was a good place to party.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Nobody could drink like us. There were no cameras and video, and I was not ever a thug. And I didn't hang out with thugs. They were just fun people that liked to have a good time. So things were different then. So historically, I've been in and around law enforcement for decades and have hundreds and hundreds of friends that are good, honest cops and firefighters and have been serving with honor for a very long time. So what happened to me was pretty shocking and hard to process.
Lori is white, blonde, and has lived in rural areas tending to her farm for years. She is someone who is passionate about honesty and accountability. She's been around lots and lots of cops over the years, and as a CPA, knows the intimate details of their lives. She told me that anyone she even suspected as being involved in misconduct, she cut out of her life. She assumed that the LA County Sheriff's Department was operating in the same way. Her reality check came in a police interaction that is familiar to many people of color. A questionable traffic stop.
February 15th of 2019, A friend of mine who worked for the film unit for the fire department had an application for a permit address that was very close to my address. And he called me and asked me to get a phone number for somebody at that location because he didn't want to have to drive all the way from La Crescenta. So at the end of my workday, I went over to get the phone number for him. And I went first to where the address he gave me, which was across the street and in an open desert area. So I turned around to come back out. And as I'm coming out, there's a sheriff's sergeant in a Class B uniform that was really frumpy and didn't fit him right. I honest to God thought it was a fake cop. I thought it was someone from the movie shoot that I was there for the film permit because it looked like, you know, it wasn't quite right, you know. And he had his hands out and said, "Turn off your car," from like, I don't know, 15 feet away. And there was like zero officer safety. Like, it was just all wrong. Every possible way what he was doing wasn't correct.
Lori is a former cop. Her friends are cops. She knows how a proper traffic stop is supposed to go down.
If he wanted to talk to me, he should have waited for me to come out on the roadway and then got behind me with his lights on and pulled a traffic stop on the roadway. I later find out he works Special Victims Unit and he's working overtime for Parks Bureau, so he has zero reason to be where he is whatsoever. And I didn't turn off my car. I said, "Why?" And he shows up at the passenger window and I don't remember exactly what he said, but I called 911 and I got the call out and I said, "I'm being detained by what I believe is a fake cop." And he freaked out, jumps back from the window. He was shocked when I did that. So I tried to video him at the window while I was on the phone with 911 and I succeeded in disconnecting the call and not videoing, and he booked back to the road and then he was on his phone. And he's talking to somebody, I don't know who he called, but he's like, "And she's got video." I heard him say that. And honestly, I feel like he was looking for some kind of sex. Like, it was just so weird. The whole contact was so weird. I was afraid to film him because I felt like he might shoot me and then say the cell phone looked like a gun. I gave him my license through a crack so nobody would say I wasn't cooperating. And then he went back to his vehicle and disappeared for like 5 or 10 minutes with my license, and I didn't know what he was doing, and I started to feel really uncomfortable down there in the, you know, in the off the road in the bush. So I drove back up onto the roadway and stopped the car and put my hands on the steering wheel, but there were people at the film place across the way and I wanted people to see me, you know, I wanted there to be witnesses. So he moves his car to behind me. So when the cops do show up from Palmdale, it looks like he's pulled me over, but that is not what happened. At no point was there ever a traffic stop. He invents a citation for failure to obey a posted sign so that he could excuse himself.
Lori fought that citation for months.
The Palmdale deputies were completely freaking out to lunch, never queried him about the oddness of him being there or what he did. I later had to bring that fireman from the film unit and the supervisor from Roads Department to court, and they both came to court and testified. More resources go into, you know, not supporting the ticket. County had to pay a fireman and a road supervisor to come to court. There was never a possibility that I could be violating anything, and they dismissed the ticket.
She also reported the cop, whose name is Brian Hudson, to the department.
Nothing he did was proper policy or officer safety. He didn't even have a reason to be there. I accused him of being a predator. He definitely got protected by somebody in senior leadership. I don't know who he was talking to, but for them to sweep that under the rug without any freaking anything, it's just too weird and too unacceptable. Internal Affairs was involved. They never gave an explanation for his behavior. They assigned it to a female lieutenant. I called the number, left her several messages. She never called me back. Then I got a letter that they were dispoing it unfounded, and if I wanted to object to call within 10 days, which I did and was again ignored. My understanding is he's personal friends with the captain at Palmdale Station, Ron Schaefer. I've known him for 20-something years. There's lots of reasons he wouldn't like me. My second husband was a traffic deputy that a lot of people didn't like, and we're still friends. Schaefer hated him. He was a deputy at Santa Clarita when my then husband was a deputy.
Hudson was never disciplined for the stop.
He got away with it. Like, he never explained what he was doing there. I'd like to know what other women in the Antelope Valley have had a strange encounter with Sergeant Brian Hudson.
Several months after her ticket was dismissed, Lori had another encounter with sheriff's deputies at her home in Palmdale. At that point, she was living on a 15-acre ranch, complete with a shooting range.
My boyfriend, that was a Marine Corps gunnery sergeant, built the gun range. It had been utilized by law enforcement clients, military clients, whoever. There were five ranches in that proximity, and none of us had any issues with the gun range being there. The deputies would come and check out the range, and we'd show it to them, and they'd say, okay, cool, no crime happening here, and leave.
You're allowed to shoot out in the desert of unincorporated L.A. County, where the ranch is. You're technically not supposed to shoot within a half mile of homes, but Lori had the okay from LASD. On May 1st, 2020, she planned a day of shooting at the range with one of her sons.
Rode up to the house and getting ready to go down to the range with my son, and I saw a coyote down by my emu. I went in, so I had my guns out, which was a handgun, 222s, a shotgun, and an AR-15 that I bought legally in 16. Grabbed the AR, went out to my shooting spot, just shooting in front of it because I didn't want to actually hit him. Chased him off the property.
After the coyote was gone, Lori and her son drove to meet a UPS delivery man to pick up a part for his rifle.
Passed two deputies driving, two radio cars driving up the street, and they were driving very aggressively and very fast. This is an area, Palmdale, it takes you 5 hours to get the cops to come to anything. So I really was surprised at how they were responding. The deputies were over at my other neighbor's house, this Filipino guy, and they were yelling at him on the outside PA to come out with his hands up. I could hear it. I called 911, and I told the 911 operator that, I said, you're yelling at my neighbor on the outside PA. And, oh, there's been a shooting over there. Like, nobody shot at anything. I shot at a coyote about 45 minutes ago, but nobody's in danger, not even the coyote. I shot the air in front of his nose.
Lori gave the operator her cell phone number and asked for the responding deputies to call her. Two men were waiting for her, a training officer and his trainee. As she approached the gate, the young rookie bent it in order to let himself through. Again, a deputy entering someone's home without their permission.
The kid charged me and attacked me, is how I remember it, and screamed into my ear, "You're under arrest for negligent discharge of a firearm." He handcuffed me savagely, so fucking tightly, that I was later begging him to loosen those handcuffs. His training officer yells, "Hurry up and get her in the car. She's going to have friendlies coming over that hill," and points up the hill towards where my neighbor lives. It's the special ed director at the Lancaster School District. Like, you know, her husband's going to come running down and assault the police or something. So the kid shoves me in the car, turns around in the seat. He reads me my rights off the card and just can't fucking believe it when I won't wave him. So he puts the card away, reaches over to the front of the car, takes the rifle out of the rack, and turns in the seat, and he takes the fucking, he racks around, and then he takes the magazine out, then he fucks with it, I don't know, and then he sort of turns it where it's now facing towards my face, and he says, "Are you sure you don't want to waive your rights?" And I said, "Absolutely not." He actually did that twice, and I was looking right down the barrel of that fucking rifle from the back seat, and I asked him, "Do you have cameras in this car?" And I was thinking those were my last words. But I was gonna die with a "fuck you" on my lips. And he says, all smugly, "No, there aren't." And he was smiling. And I said, "Well, there should be." And I waited to die again. And I was really proud that those were my last words. Because I really thought he was gonna fucking smoke me. And then while he still had the rifle in his hands, this fucking TO sticks his head in the car and goes, "What the fuck are you doing?" He puts it in the rack, and at the same time he goes, "She won't waive her rights." And the training officer goes, "Well, partner, we need a frank."
A frank, meaning a felony. The training officer was telling the rookie to say Lori had committed a felony in order to arrest her. They also searched her house.
The training officer looks at the kid and he says, "How about criminal threats?" And then they invented that to book me for. I never threatened anybody because they really wanted to search my house and they were pissed off I wouldn't waive my rights. So they got their search warrant. I was very afraid when they took me to jail at Palmdale Station. I spent about probably like 5 hours there before some deputies came in that were from the cops bureau. It was a sergeant named Brian Barclay and his two deputies. They were doing an interdiction detail to not have people be in custody that didn't need to be in custody. So Barclay said to me, I need to get you out of here. You have a lynch mob after you.
After about an hour, Lori was processed out.
When they were processing me out, there was a lot of, like, I could see deputies peeking. Like, there had been an argument, like, whatever had gone down, like, they wanted to see what it was about. But I honestly feel like I was supposed to be an in-custody death. I really, really do. When you have another cop telling you you're in danger, and you have a lynch mob after you, that's pretty fucking terrifying.
She was taken to Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital, where the deputies told staff that she was not on a psychiatric hold. But she was kept overnight anyway, because the doctor was unavailable. He eventually showed up on an iPad screen and decided to keep Lori for another day because guns were noted in the deputy's report. 2 days after the incident, she finally went home.
On the way home from the hospital, I called somebody I know that had just promoted from the academy and was an expert on teaching constitutional policing and told them what happened. Nobody wants to yeet their career, but definitely not what you're supposed to be doing. And he gave me a list. He told me how I needed to make my complaint.
But after she complained,
a lieutenant called me and told me that they were going to get a felony no-knock arrest warrant for 2 counts of assault rifle possession and that I should run.
The warrant was never served, but Lori was charged with felony possession of an assault rifle, even though when she bought the gun, it was still legal to own, exempting her from prosecution. The deputies also lied and said that her .22 caliber rifle was another AR-15.
That detective twice said under oath she didn't know if I had any guns at all that were illegal, any assault rifles, because she didn't really know guns. They didn't even bring the guns to court. They brought pictures of the guns to court. So at no point would they ever make it be a misdemeanor or acknowledge that I legally purchased that gun. They prosecuted me as a felony through a whole 14 months. So at the last hearing, the head DA there had agreed to a full dismissal a whole year later if I would, in the meantime, plead guilty to misdemeanor gun possession, and then in a year, they would set it aside like it never happened.
After a year, Lori filed for the dismissal herself. Her record was cleared in the summer of 2022. Afterwards, she left California for good.
I did get on the record that the cops threatened me with a firearm and made up a search warrant. It's like, I'm telling her in court these cops committed felonies and she doesn't care. There's a deputy sitting there, he's a mandated reporter. Nobody cares. They control the judges in the courtrooms. If you didn't have judges that would play along, you can't do it. That was one of the reasons why I left California, because it's right. They're right saying that they're going to come after you. If you're in their area where they can make up a story and control the narrative, you're in danger. It is 100% dangerous to run your mouth about dirty cops in LA. There's a mechanism in the sheriff's department to protect bad cops, 100%, without a doubt. And a public trust is at an all-time low. I could see why. You know, because you can't trust that you're going to be safe necessarily. Everybody on the job has their eye on that fear. You know, they hold your pension over your head to keep you in check. And that's really frustrating because it really shouldn't be that hard for a cop to report misconduct. So the code of silence is real. Now, I've been around law enforcement a really long time. There's plenty of crime out there. If you just figure out, is there a crime? Who committed it? Follow that, you'll probably be okay. But you know, you're gonna make up a crime so that you can say you had to have done something. They make something up and then accuse you of it. That's not police work, that's thuggery.
People on the inside are starting to speak up. Last week, I met with three current LASD employees who say they've been attempting to speak up about sexual harassment, racism, and unethical promotions. I'm going to keep them anonymous and change their voices to prevent retaliation.
It was a lot of racial things. If you were sleeping with the right person, you got whatever you wanted. Or if you're the son, daughter, cousin, niece, whatever, nepotism of a sworn personnel, you were going to get that position. What I've noticed in the department, the ones that end up getting the promotions or becoming higher positions are the ones that could be their puppet. With the department, we have things in place like grievances, the union. But when you use these things, the department frowns upon it and you get punished. You're not supposed to be retaliated against, but they do. These things are put in place, and when you utilize them, you are blackballed, you are mistreated. My turning point was the incident that happened recently where he had been promising me this and promising me that and threatening me to stay quiet and threatening me not to complain about certain things. And I sat there quietly, allowing him to bully me. I was just done after that. But then fighting the department, like you being one person fighting the whole department, and they're all on his side, knowing he's wrong, knowing that he has a history of doing this, knowing that I'm probably the 50th person who've had similar complaints, they treat me as if I'm the bad guy. Oh, you're the bad seed here. You're the one causing all these problems. I should have taken what I dealt with those first 10 years and left and gone somewhere else. But instead, I fell for the lies and just got caught up in it again. Speaking from being an African-American woman, you get upset, you get irritated, and you can't understand why your sister over here is allowing somebody else to treat them inferior, and you're fighting for them, and they're afraid to fight or even speak up or do anything. So now you're pissed off. You don't want to be there. And it's like you feel like you're hopeless because you don't have any help. Even if it's going to be me out there by myself, then it's going to be me out there by myself. And I'm going to have to do something about it. I'll be there with you.
Even still, the violence inside and outside the department continues. So what can be done about all this? Doesn't anyone care? That's coming up next week.
H-double-O-D, the whole hood know me. Fuck the police, I'm a fucking hood trophy.
You've been listening to A Tradition of Violence, a history of deputy gangs in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Hosted and executive produced by Cerise Castle. Music by Yellow Hill and Steels. If you're enjoying A Tradition of Violence, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a written review. For breaking news and updates on deputy gangs, follow at LASD Gangs on social media. To support Cerise's reporting and for exclusive bonus content, subscribe to the LASD Gangs Patreon.
This is for the hood.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series. A smart TV built by the streaming pros.